Three, two, one. Anthony Darby.
Sean Kent.
Very special guest, Eric Stamp, with us today. Eric.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
So excited to have you on. If you are a Maryland cannabis patient, involved in any Maryland cannabis patient group online, involved in any of the initiatives, then you do not need this introduction. But if you do not know, Eric Stamper is with Veterans 22 Initiative. He's a huge, huge Maryland advocate, and not just Maryland, but national advocate for veterans and cannabis, and was really kind enough and humble enough to drive down from Baltimore today and be on our podcast. So I just want to thank you so much for coming down. For those folks that don't know, give them your quick bio and introduction, and kind of let us know what led you to a service member to now this cannabis advocate.
Great. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. Anthony, Chuck, Brandon, appreciate it. You guys down at Peninsula Alternative Health are doing great things for us. I appreciate you guys taking charge and jumping on the initiative program that we have there. I'll tell you what we are a little bit real quick, and we'll go into that. So we're kind of twofold. We're about hiring and business practices for veterans, family, and first responders in the cannabis, alternative, and holistic healthcare space. At the same time, on the other side of the sword that we yield is a 22% incentive discount on medicine, as well as other necessary requirements in the ancillary space, healthcare, CBD massages, acupuncture, yoga, all the really critical things that help people save lives. So I started in the Navy back in 1990, but prior to that, I was a recreational user, if that's what you called it, when I was in high school.
Did you grow up around here?
Yeah, I grew up in Baltimore, Baltimore City, Fellows Point area. So I actually grew up in the bars, cobblestone and bars, Shining shoes, digging out the basements and finding old coins to, stocking shelves before 21. I remember this is when Towson started getting hot. We used to get a lot of visitors from Towson down to the point. And I was 18 years old running the door. So we had people below the age and above the age, and people were actually checking my ID when they were coming into the bar. So a little bit of humor. Which brings up,
times have changed a little bit now, right?
Alcohol stayed with me the whole time up until about 5 years ago. So, and that's another important aspect of cannabis. But I grew up in Baltimore, come from a military family, knew I was always going to go into the military of some branch. My mother said, the taller you get, it's just a longer ladder to climb to knock out your front teeth because you're going into the military. It was like destined. So there's some humor there. My whole family's been in the military from one fashion or another. Mom was in the Army. My father was in the Army in Vietnam. My uncles were in the Navy. My grandfather was in the Navy. He left Pearl Harbor right before it got bombed. And my great-grandfather worked for the Department of the Navy in Alabama. So a long line of military history.
Yeah, some was an
easy
there,
transition.
Man.
But, one thing we talk about is why are we called Veterans Initiative 22? Well, we've got an estimated 22 veterans that are committing suicide every day because of PTSD. And in my opinion, as well as a lot of others, cannabis is a lifesaver. I wouldn't be here today to talk to you if I didn't have cannabis in my life. I think it's transformational, and I believe cannabis is going to continue to save lives. And really, we're about education and awareness. We work deeply with a lot of partners, including Peninsula Alternative Health. We've got over 50 business partners that support our program, and they're all offering that incentive or something similar to it, as well as hiring vets, family, and first responders in their program. So we appreciate everything that our business partners do. One important aspect of that is the Veterans Administration. They're one of our recent, we call them teaming partners. If you have been to the Cannabis Science Conference or if you're getting active in the cannabis space here in Maryland, the Veterans Administration PTSD and Suicide Prevention Team has been coming to some of these events.
That's amazing.
That's a huge step.
That is.
Is that from your work in getting them to the table?
Jose Marino, he's one of our folks in the team. He worked really hard. He likes to play in the background, and he's been working diligently with the VA, the VFW, and the Legions, making things like this happen.
Is that at the D.C. level? Is that at the Maryland level?
That's at the Maryland level.
So that's how the conversation started.
So, we're, I guess, about a year ago, I got into the VA talking about cannabis. You know, I'm a patient, of course. I'm a 90% disabled vet, you know, both physical and mental. And so I'm at the VA a lot. And when I'm there, I'm talking to all my doctors. I'm talking to the patient advocates. I'm talking to other patients. And you'll be surprised by the level of support that the Veterans Administration has. I have to say it's probably a little geographic support. I can't answer to other VA hospitals throughout the United States, but here in Maryland, we've got a major mental health issue. We've got a lot of addictive problems, and you know, we got a lot of suicide problems as well. So mental health is key.
I feel like that's somewhat present across like the healthcare lines more and more, where like I hear it more and more from nurses where they're really pro cannabis and cannabis therapies and treatments, maybe even more so than doctors, definitely more so than institutional hospital staff, the CF everything's at the hospital. They're the most scared of cannabis and kind of what that means for their hospital. But it's interesting that you're telling me the story at the VA because, are you penalized now, the VA, if you test positive for cannabis?
No, there's a lot of misinformation.
Yeah. Please.
Yeah, I think that's what people...
It gets a little bit confusing. It really does. And so basically, I'll flip to it. The VA asked us to talk to them about our cannabis usage. They started about a year and a half ago doing some statistical analysis with some of our problems, mainly with pharmaceutical issues, overprescriptions and abuse and addiction problems. So the VA has gone through this major transformation in the way they do healthcare. And they just approved the Mission Act, which allows us to see doctors out in town now. So we're going through some major changes. In that process, we have to understand cannabis is still Schedule I. With that said, technically the VA, a federal agency, cannot really discuss it. So in states that have medical cannabis programs, we can actively go to the VA and talk to them about our usage. They can't prescribe. We know that's a federal term. They can't recommend. So they're kind of hands off, but they can talk and they can listen.
Are
they knowledgeable?
Through my experience,
are you there?
I don't have the effort, the time to sit down in front of groups of VA staffers. These are some of the things that we work on.
Veterans like yourself, I guess they're probably learning because more and more folks like yourself are proclaiming that they are using medical cannabis and are telling them that I'm no longer needing this and no longer needing that. I guess they're probably getting at least more familiar with it.
Yeah, well, so that brings up the concern. People might take this the wrong way, but it's the fact of life. When we have addiction problems, what are we looking for? We're looking for our drugs, right? So when we're addicted to opiates or all these other drugs that we get addicted to that were prescribed, and doctors at the VA know that cannabis can help, not all of them know it, some of them are against it. So they're talking to their patients and they're like, oh, so you're using cannabis for pain relief. Well, maybe we should start dropping some of your opiate usage. And if you're already an addict, that's a no-go. So I think some of these little misunderstandings have to do with patients themselves who don't want to release other forms of medication. And so that creates a problem. And then people hear that, oh, the VA, they're pulling me from my meds. Well, damn, aren't they supposed to? If you're trying to use cannabis to save your life or do some transitional things in your healthcare.
It's supposed to be substituting, correct?
Thank you. Right. So I think there's a little bit of problem with that. That's kind of the belief there.
So is it my understanding then that there's not a lot of severe consequences for you being enrolled in the Maryland Cannabis Program and receiving your rights from the VA?
None at all. The VA has policy in black and white, and they reiterate the policy every 6 months or so as, you know, new bills come along. But they can talk to us about it. They want to hear about our usage. They want to, you know, start
to learn about
stuff.
It.
Does the Mission Act change that if you're able to go see another provider and that provider happens to be a cannabis recommender? Is that something that could legitimately happen, or would they not fund that?
Right now, there is no funding set. Thank you. Yeah, there's no funding set aside for the VA to make recommendations. They're basically referring them out in town. We've got some people in the VA that know what we're up to and to support our program and make, you know, just the verbal referrals. With that said, you know, it costs between $150 to $300 to see a doctor in Maryland. With our program, we've got about four doctors that support our efforts with free or $22 medical evaluation. So for all the veterans out there, please keep that in mind. share that information. You don't have to spend your money. And the VA is not going to give you any money for your medicine or your doctor. So
right. And there's also initiatives out there with the help of the MMCC sign-up process. I know that dispensaries like us, you can just simply reach out to us and we'll come in and we'll actually walk you through registering with the MMCC, get your picture taken, the whole nine yards. That seems to be a hurdle for some of the older patients of all kind of walks and likes.
Sure is.
Although it's great that you're not being persecuted by the VA, there's certainly a lot of upside that we could be taking on, a lot more progress we could be making in terms of even getting doctors to be able to write recommendations and if nothing else, getting doctors more familiar with the idea of, hey, cannabis can actually be used as a first line of therapy instead of opioids, instead of the last line of therapy once they're already addicted to opioids. Sure. How do we help impact that measure as civilians to help you guys?
Well, you know, that's the easy part. That's writing your congressman. That's lobbying. That's protesting. We've seen you down in Annapolis. You know, that's how we make change. We got to keep our press. We got to keep the full press on with our legislators, the ones who are actually making the policies for us. So, you know, learn how a bill becomes a law.
Is there any low-hanging fruit? Like, when you look at, like, progress to be made, is there anything? So we look at like, what we'd like to see happen, and then we immediately say, that's not what we can do. We have to see, like, what's possible.
What's possible? What's the reality?
The reality of it all is CSA Schedule 1. That's the reality. Once the feds diminish Schedule 1 of cannabis, where they talk about it has no medical benefit like LSD and all these other
things that might have medical benefits.
Yeah.
Wait, didn't FDA just approve LSD and MMDA and all these other mushrooms for
PTSD? Yeah.
Mushroom therapy.
Mushrooms. It's great. I mean, healthcare is going. Yeah, it's going to look a lot different 5 to 10 years than it even does today.
That damn devil's lettuce.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like, so. I can tell you a very common theme from the vets in our dispensary that I talked to. One, I've gotten really close to one veteran, and he definitely has PTSD. He doesn't leave his house very often. Our dispensary is one of the few places that he'll actually hop in the car, get and drive, and come into. And he runs through this laundry list of prescriptions that they would throw him on, and like, he'd have an episode of just like what I would call an emotional breakdown. And it would all of a sudden throw two more pills at him because he had one episode. And now those two pills now like either dumped him down or he fell empty. Just the roller coaster that he went on, it was a pharmacological nightmare.
Yep.
And he uses a significant amount of cannabis compared to the average patient.
Yeah.
But the quality of life that he has now, I mean, this gentleman is so kind that we would show up and he would be out cleaning our hedges, like trimming our hedges, like just because he's got time on his hands, he's disabled, he wants to help out, he's looking for a place, and like where he, like he wants to see clean hedges when he comes to his expense, you know what I mean? Like he's just, it's cool that, and he's not the only veteran we have that we're like one of the few places that they feel comfortable coming. It's been the sanctuary for a lot of these guys, and it's really amazing to see them blossom and like come in happier. And it's also amazing to see some of the old heads that we have, right? Like some of the Vietnam guys that like, you know, they experience cannabis in a very different way.
Oh, yeah. Completely different way.
You know, the Acapulco Gold Request guys, like, I want the Acapulco Gold, right? It's all they want.
One of three strains available in the late 70s.
Mally Wally, Acapulco Gold, and White Widow.
Well, you know, in the Civil War, the generals were giving cannabis to the troops right after these battles and skirmishes, you know, brother against brother. So cannabis has been in our military for such a long time. It's just been, you know, scrutinized. The country of Canada, their active duty military is allowed to consume cannabis. And
really?
So, yes.
Did that go into effect just with the passing of the recreational bill?
3 months ago, 4 months ago? Yeah.
That's interesting.
So, you know, we got whole countries.
If you're listening, active duty of Canada, don't be the guy that screws this up for everyone. Yeah. Eats too many edibles and does something dumb. There's always one. I'm picturing them down right now. Yeah, exactly. Falls off the boat or something.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are some stringent policies and protocols to follow, just like alcohol. You know, that's kind of the way they're looking at it.
Yeah.
But I wish, to be honest with you, I'll tell you a quick C story. But honestly, I think if I was under the consumption of cannabis when I was active duty in the military, I think we could have done some different and even better things. It's really, it sparks your mind. And to me, it's like an entrepreneurship kind of mentality and, you know, strategizing and philosophizing. I really believe cannabis is transformational in that way, too.
It gives you that mindfulness, your ability to sit out of a situation. I truly believe that some of the best thoughts for our business and largest challenges have come from medicating, sitting back, and
detaching a little bit,
detaching myself, and philosophizing. And that's something that I, to your point, I was never able to do. We can get into some down the road a little bit about the alcohol piece, but I think that's what a lot of people go to alcohol to get that detachment. It works for a lot of people, but for me, it didn't. And cannabis was a way for me to detach, sit back, and kind of get some peace and strategize and think on that.
Yeah. So one of the positions I held in the military about halfway through my career was a urinalysis program coordinator. So I was the guy.
Oh, you were the guy.
I was the guy. Yeah. I was looking for you. Yes. I was waiting to find you. And when I tested your piss, if it came up hot, it was my job to see you out. So, you know, it's funny coming into the military, you know, at the age of 18 on a drug waiver for cannabis. And then, you know, halfway through a career, kick people out because of drugs and cannabis. And, you know, after the fact, here I am advocating and lobbying for cannabis for our veterans. It's what a strange twist of fate.
How did you feel when you were doing that? Like, were you just like were most of these guys like degenerates and they just like couldn't follow the rules and needed to go? So like at that point in time, the policy like made sense, or were you like, I mean, these are all good guys, and they'd probably be worse off if they weren't using cannabis.
I will say the ones that we were catching were the prior. The ones who, you know, weren't high performers, didn't do a lot of good work. From my experience and knowledge, there's not a lot of people in the military doing drugs. I mean, obviously we have random testing and, you know, monthly, yearly, semi-annual. But the quality, you're right, the quality wasn't probably what we really needed anyway. I will say this. After the fact, I've run into some people now who are still active duty military and who are having problems because, you know, they've been caught using cannabis. And these are high profile people with a lot of skills and a lot of experience. So it covers the whole gamut. It really does.
That's what I feel like the people that are the low performing individuals who got caught using cannabis, they probably would have been the low performing individuals anyway, whether or not they use cannabis or not. I mean, we talk about like the professional use of cannabis and doing it for the right reasons, like we all talked about here, and not just doing it just to get high. Sure. The couch is productive, like you said, it helps stimulate creativity, it helps with a lot of different things. So a lot of times when people say, oh, you know, get kicked out for smoking pot, maybe it's not always maybe they'd be kicked out anyway.
Well, like I was saying, there are some quality people now. I've got people with PhDs and who are doctors that have been kicked to the curb because of their uses.
I can't tell you, always comes back to alcohol so many times, but the amount of professionals in those types of fields that say, man, I'm dying for the day that I hang up my badge, I hang up my stethoscope, I get out of my field so that I can finally smoke a joint or finally go back to using cannabis because I really miss it, and I you know, I don't like drinking, but it's my only option, and here I am 15, 20 pounds heavier than I want to be drinking alcohol. And it's just
the same thing I had, because I was in the construction industry. I was a foreman in the construction industry for 8 years in D.C., right? Same, almost same scenario, right? Like, same atmosphere, same drug testing policies that we have, random and all this stuff. And a lot of times, like, I still smoked. I tried my best. I knew when I was going to different jobs that might test. And the best guys that I had all smoked pot and didn't drink. Mm-hmm. And then I'd rather, like, I used to tell people all the time, God, I wish everybody would just go home and smoke a little bit every night instead of drinking. Actually, the guys go home, they drink, they show up late, they don't come in, they get in trouble, they do all these things.
You get on a job site.
And you can smell it the next day. I can tell you how many times guys would come in shit-faced. And we're doing dangerous stuff, right? I mean, we're doing electrical work, high-voltage electrical work. We're driving around on lifts, you know, stories and stories up in the air. You can fall out. It's crazy to me. And it killed me when I saw people get kicked off because they failed a drug test and they were good employees. You know, they were hard workers. They came to work every day and did the right thing.
So we're talking about alcohol a little bit. Let's keep it going about military and alcohol. You know, that is our choice. We could use no drugs at all or get prescribed drugs to use. And believe it or not, there's a lot of us who get prescribed drugs just so we can get a little bit of relief from everyday life. You know what I'm saying? That's just the way it is. So I don't know where I was going with this, but you were on the tyrant. I was going to jump on board, but I'll pass and defer.
Well, we were talking about alcohol and military use. And I think what you're probably saying is that these military officers and that are enrolled, they're constantly pushed towards alcohol as their only alternative for daily relief because cannabis isn't an option. And if you don't want to use alcohol in front of your peers, then likely they're going to be prescribed a pharmaceutical like a Xanax or something like that. So it's not like these folks aren't medicating daily. They're just medicating with alcohol or prescription
drugs. Exactly how I did stepping. It. No, that's exactly how I did it. I'm a recovering alcoholic. You know, I drank my whole life. I told you I grew up in Baltimore and Fellas Point in the bars. And so I ended my life, drinking life, on Gentleman Jack. You know what I mean? I drank my whole career. I drank families away. I drank relationships away. I drank my job away. There was a lot of damage that alcohol has done to me. And here I am now trying to still save myself from a lot of that former damage. And I still struggle and suffer, you know, with relationships, with people, with opportunities. But the point is, cannabis has allowed me to overcome all of that. And at my darkest hour, my plateau, I had a top secret SCI clearance. I was locked away behind vaults and doors where nobody could find me. And inside those vaults and doors, I had safes and locks, more and more. And inside those safes, I had cryptographic material and I had my bottles of alcohol. I would go to work 18 hours and lock myself away and drink and work. And that's how I lived my life. And so here we are now.
Yeah, that's not an uncommon story for super high performing individuals that just used alcohol in a different way that they medicated. And like my whole argument with cannabis is, to your point, you said you still have daily struggles, like we all do. I don't use cannabis and all of a sudden like all my issues go away, and like it's just an easy way for me to face my issues in a more strategic and creative way. And for me, it's a way to better to daily medicate than anything else that I've ever been accustomed to. So alcohol, although it was great in certain times of my life, the older I got, the harder it was to attack on my body. I just got to a point where we opened the dispensary and I had 160 SKU items of things to utilize to relax on a daily basis and medicate. But I haven't had a drink since we opened our dispensary, and my life, my personal life has been better. None of my other partners have taken the same road. They still use alcohol, and it's still a great, you know, good way for them, recreational. Yeah, a lot of my friends do. We throw parties. We still let people drink. You know, I think I look at all these things as substances, and it's used in the right way, whether it's mushrooms, LSD, whether it's, I mean, there's more and more stuff coming out about LSD and alcohol. And if that's true and these studies prove that, then if you believe in substitution therapy and you believe in Suboxone, you know, you want to push Narcan and all these different types of things, and I just think you got to look at all the different substances and all their different values in different ways. I don't necessarily know there's anything that doesn't have any value at all. Even opiates. I mean, we mother have opiates all day long. There's people that are at home right now listening, saying, without an opiate, my pain level would be a 10. There's nothing else that helps me other than this. There's few and far between.
Yeah. Let me jump on that. So we got to understand, cannabis isn't the final solution. You know, it is just one tool in our box to help with these problems. So, you know, you think just because you're taking cannabis, it's going to resolve all your problems and issues. No. I say, first of all, what we should be doing before we do any supplement of using consumption of anything, we should take that alternative and holistic approach. We should have a good diet. We should exercise well. We should have good mind, body, spirit. You know, all of these things are more critical. And I think if those things are in place first, and then you're still having issues, then start looking at the supplemental requirements.
I'm balancing your endocannabinoid system at that point. But there's so many times I would make the same joke. Like if someone comes in and maybe they're like they're significantly overweight and they have their ankle hurts and they say, you know, which strain should I use? We're like, a walk.
An apple.
Like a lifestyle change, honestly. Like, because there's no strain that we have in here that's going to do anything else other than mask your problem. But if you find that using cannabis at night lets you get some sleep, so you wake up more energized, and then you're able to be in less pain because you use a CBD and one-to-one rub, that as you're walking more and you're changing your diet, then yeah. But I more so now than ever believe that diet, like the whole gut brain connection, it's you can't convince me that it's not there. Like,
yeah, and I think, and a lot, like you were saying, Darbs, I know firsthand, somebody that I know just used a CBD, and when she uses CBD, it enables her to be able to exercise, but without it, everything's, you know, tired and achy in the joints. She has a lot of, you know, arthritis and all kinds of stuff. But by using the cannabis, she's able to exercise, right? Which gets back to treating this whole wellness spectrum that I kind of think you were alluding to, where you change your diet a little bit, use the cannabis to help you do some of these things. Exercise. Like, I wrote a blog one time, you know, about how you can incorporate a small amount of cannabis into a running routine to get more creative out of it, right? Like, there's a lot of these interesting, cool wellness things that you can do. You don't just have to sit there on the couch and take bong hits and watch TV. That's, like, not the way to do it. Right?
I love how these conversations start, like, multiple other conversations. So when I first got into the industry a little bit, I was working with Greenway Consults, trying to attract patients to the doctors. That was a lot of work and effort. And so in that, every patient I was able to acquire, I ran 4.20 miles for them in the park. And so
I remember watching that on Facebook.
and it was like taking that whole mind-body spirit concept.
Yeah, he had on the cool socks. He'd be out awesome. Post in front of all the Washington monuments. I remember that. Like, you were so active in the community. It amazes me. That's why I was so excited to have you on. And before we get too far into this, we'll definitely let you go through what you're active in right now. But, you know, between hemp and cannabis, you do so much, and it's so exciting to follow you on Facebook and see you doing all these things, including when you were running 4.2 miles for everything. I was like, man, this guy runs a lot.
That's awesome.
The best one I did, I had a whole family, and I did a marathon. At one time, I just kept running. So the bitch about all that is 4.20 is hard to get exact when you're running through the woods. So sometimes there's like 4.1, 4.3. I'm like, shit, I can't count that. It's not 4.2. And so I wouldn't count it. So I had to be
you. Oh, you had to be dead on
my OCD,
to the tent,
you know?
Right?
Nice.
That's awesome.
Mm-mm-mm.
So I would like to be able to see more folks looking at cannabis as an alternative to just utilizing alcohol for a daily driver or prescriptions. I think there's I always break our patient population into, and this is not statistically accurate, this is Anthony Darby's anecdotal breakdown. but I think that there are 20% of our patients that truthfully it's overly life affecting. Without their medicine, they have seizures, they could literally die. And then there's about 20% of our patients that are probably overdoing it. These guys are likely overindulging in their medicine. These are the ones that are close to their limit without super long medical histories. But my argument is the substitution side of things is that them coming and using whatever's in our dispensary is safer than 90% of what else they would be using outside of our dispensary. So there's a place for it.
And those horrible side effects of cannabis, God forbid.
Yeah. I know, right? Like, they played too many video games and lost their girlfriend.
It might be one of the worst,
sorry,
right?
Sorry, 20%. But 60% of our patients, 60% of our patients are a lot like what I consider myself, which is this wellness part of me, where it's just a small tool. I haven't consistently worked out in a gym in my life ever, but since we opened a dispensary at least once a week, I'm in with a trainer every single week. My exercise has gone up. My weight's gone down. I'm in the best, like, physical condition that I've been, and it's, you know, cannabis is a tool. as I've been working on my mental, as I've been working on my physical, and I just feel like...
I was going to mention that when I saw you, how good you were looking.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Because I didn't always look this good. About a year ago, when we first opened a dispensary, and I couldn't get product in, and my partners were mad at me. It was rough. But now everything's fixed, and things are good, and patients are happy. We got a new parking lot. Great. But I do. I think it's a wellness tool. I think more and more people are going to be looking at it as a way to, as a therapy, especially as I think a lot more people are going to be blown away at the topicals and the non-psychoactive things that we have. I mean, if I'm a runner and I came home and lathered myself in Mary's one-to-one rub on my legs, it's probably a much better experience than I've had with Bengay or, you know, many of the other topicals that are available today. And I just, Chuck and I get really excited about, like, the sports medicine side of cannabis.
Oh, I can add something to that if you let me.
Please.
An organization here.
Yes, please, no one's hear me talk.
That's enough. A friend of mine is actually going to be rowing across the Atlantic Ocean. And part of that program is, and I, this is all news to me, they do something called ibuprofen mass loading because they're rowing in shifts, you know, for weeks on end. I mean, literally hour upon hour. And so their body is physically just exhausted. So what they do is they all mass load ibuprofen. And I think that is damn unhealthy if you ask me.
Kidneys and your liver can't love that.
Yeah.
And I thought... Wow. All right.
So and so when we were talking, like he's like, we had a meeting at our board and we're like looking at using CBD as a replacement instead of ibuprofen. I'm like, now we're on to something.
Yeah.
And so, you know, coming from the Navy, I would love to see a CBD banner coming from, you know, some of their oars or the side of their boat as they're crossing the Atlantic using CBD.
Holistics is owning. Yeah. I need a phone number ASAP. I'll give them all the CBD. Yeah. We need a good sponsor. Yeah.
So is this a Navy rowing team that's doing
this? No, some are active duty, some are feds. And see, that was a big part of their concern. They're afraid that they're going to test positive for CBD. And so I had that long discussion about testing, you know, policies, procedures, and the black and white of it
all. I guess if you're going to mass load it, though, that might be the only time there might be a concern, right? If all of a sudden they're drinking like 20,000 grams of full spectrum.
Well, maybe with the CBD, they wouldn't necessarily have to mass load it. Right, maybe it's a different, but who knows?
And space limitations. So I'm thinking concentrates, and think about their modalities. They're sweating the whole time, so creams aren't going to work for them.
Just give them a little CBD distillate in a syringe. Put it in
their
tongue.
That's what I'm thinking.
A little almost RSO style.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of opportunities out there in the sporting world for medicine. What is it? The NFL is about to make some approvals.
There's a lot of
NHL.
CTE. A lot of concussion and traumatic brain injury research coming about how marijuana and cannabis are not going to kill your brain cells, but they might be a neuroprotectant and actually help sustain your brain cells. And you're getting more and more about cannabis eating up plaque in Alzheimer's patients. I mean, the research
is super critical with our geriatric community as well.
Over 65 is the largest patient community adopting cannabis right now for a lot of reasons, but... And that's what I get excited about, too, is like these, you know, we've had several hospice patients come to us.
Yeah.
And as an end-of-life option, cannabis is, to me, such a more pleasant way of doing things than some of their other options. So
I'm a caregiver myself, and I've been bedside with some of our patients. And those are sad parts of our work, and watch them in that state.
It's becoming more and more, right, because our patient base is growing. It surprises me, but like it seems like almost like now, like once a month, we either lose a patient or, you know what I mean? And it's crazy. But when you have, you know, several thousand patients and some of them are hospice and some of them are end of life, it's in cancer. We have, you know, obviously a lot of the cancer community utilizing our services.
Can I flip and ask you a question, if you don't mind? What are you doing above and beyond to some of our more ailing patients? Are you involved in, like, the Compassion Care Fund, or do you have any other programs that you're working on?
Well, you remember we have our in-house Canna Care Fund, right?
Okay, yeah. Thank you very much for reminding me. Yep.
So typically that's the avenue, and our resources go there so that we can kind of self-sustain that fund. I will tell you that we couldn't do that without our vendor participation. So there's great folks like Grow West, sticks out in particular. Like, those guys are sending us flower at and just saying, put this aside for your Can of Care fund, because they know we do a lot of due diligence in our Can of Care fund.
Sorry, that gives me chills. You see that?
Yeah, it's a
because that's a win. That's something tangible and important. Medicine's very expensive, and I'm disabled, right? And so I'm on a tight budget, and when I have to spend a lot of that on the medicine because our federal government doesn't help me, it's important to find good sources and good quality and good pricing. So when you got cultivators that are involved in your support, that's amazing.
Yeah, we do a lot of due diligence in our Can of Care fund interview process, but unfortunately around here to find folks that are socioeconomically struggling to pay for their medicine is not hard, right? So there's the demand is certainly higher than with the resources that we're able to always throw to it. And you know, our Saturdays, we do, it's a gram special, but really what it's turned into is for the folks that are really struggling, it's a way for them to spend $28 and get 4 grams of flour, and a lot of them look forward to that every week. We're always going to have an option for patients that make sure that at some point we're making sure that if you don't have, you know, $10 and under, we're going to have options for those folks. So we try to do our best to pass along savings, of course, and be competitive with everyone else. We do the 22% veterans discount. We do a 15% senior discount and a...
Well, I know you guys do tons of specials throughout the week and programming, so yeah.
But you're right, like honestly, like even for us, like this is gonna be a shocker to a lot of people. We pay for our own medicine, like the way that we run our dispensary is very lean, and we don't just treat like a candy shop where we just get to buy whatever we want. So we pay for our own medicine, and it's basically after, unfortunately, admit this, but after mortgage and stuff, it's probably like my second or third highest bill every month because I medicate a lot. So I'm not, I think that keeps me somewhat in tune to what other people feel and understand that like this is a medicine for people, and this is not, you know, I think also what the patients need to understand though is that with the way that we're structured with the federal government and stuff, like we have to make at least enough profit to be able to pay our tax bill, which is like what a lot of people don't understand is that even the dispensaries that are profitable, like ours, because everyone sees our line out the door and they see how busy we are, and I said, you guys must be killing us. I said, just enough to pay our tax bill. And that's a huge win. Like that's like for us to be able to do that. Like I don't think people understand the magnitude
of just being able to pay.
How few dispensaries actually made enough money, like
to pay their taxes.
Yes, we made money. With every dollar that we made went to go pay taxes because the IRS 280E affects dispensaries harder than any other entity. If you're a cultivator or you're a processor, you're able to tie a lot of your expenses to cost of goods sold. If you're a dispensary, you can't do that. And I'm not here crying the blues, but I just want people to understand when they think that these dispensaries are profiteering. And some of them, you can look at their prices and they're not in line with the market. But when you look at what we've done and you look at like if you're there to take care of patients, and you have to pay the taxes, and we literally like
take care of patients and pay the taxes.
And Chuck literally middled it to a point that like unprecedented. It was somewhat by luck that we made enough money to pay our taxes.
I want to capture something I think I heard you say. So folks out there that are listening, even dispensary owners struggle too. Look, it's about, you know, we know there's a lot of money. $95 million this program made last year in the state of Maryland. And that's a wonderful number. It's far above what was expected, 23, 24, whatever it was. But it's a testament to what you guys are doing, trying to make your prices, you know, patient-friendly. When the owner of a dispensary says they struggle paying for their own medicine every month, that has to say something to our society about... The money is not all being made in the industry. There's a lot of different things happening in the environment.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I mean that's something. I mean people. I mean we're pretty open about the fact that that's kind of.
We
the
started
way
getting
it
real
is.
Open right after taxes
right
came.
Right after tax season,
and
right?
It was like, and I don't know. Maybe I like because honestly, I would lie to you if I didn't tell you after January 1st and I saw the numbers that we did. I was like, well, we're gonna pay taxes, but like I made a profit. Like I. Did I make too much money? I don't know. Like, and then all of a sudden I see the tax bill. I was like, well, $0 can't be too much money. So I guess I'm not a profiteer.
That's the difference between five guys and McDonald's dollar menu, right?
Yeah. So, but that being said, I still emphasize with patients, and you bring up a very good point, you know, what are we constantly doing for patients? And well, hopefully with more processors and growers coming online, that will help continue to make prices more and more affordable for patients. And
we've seen that already. I mean, the prices that we have, especially for things like vape cartridges and a lot of the concentrates, we just talked to Donnie like about it. I mean, 50%. They're half the price of what they used to be.
Yeah.
So things are starting to come down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and as that, it puts the pressure, and we're getting more and more patients that are leaving the street because it's now affordable. That was a big thing for patients, excuse me, especially those that were on a financial budget. I'm going to go spend $200 for a certification and then come in and spend $60 for an eighth of weed when I get a quarter of good, good cannabis off the street for $80. That's not a compelling argument for folks. But now when they know they can come in and they can take advantage of different specials and the cartridges that we have within our dispensary, although I know it's a hot topic and there's going to be some issues.
Oh, yeah, that's a hot topic.
I would argue there's still better, especially Rhythm and Curio, that are better than what's out there on the street with states that have no testing at all. So it's going to be... The pricing issue, I think, is gonna be there for a while until these other processors and growers get in line. We had Dr. Hoffman, Mary Pat on, and we were discussing the kind of the issue if insurance does get involved. There's going to be so much red tape. It's going to be really muddy waters. It might not even be the best thing. The best thing might just be for the market to continue to mature, prices to come down, and it'd be easier for patients to get their medicine.
Well, there's a lot of things going on in Maryland, especially with the cost of regular prescriptions of all medicines. And so some of the fight that we're going to be looking at, there's a lot of avenues, is how come cannabis isn't part of that prescription cost issue? So we all know it's the feds. So really, we got to work hard at that level.
We got into it. Like, Mary Pat was going into kind of like how consumer advertising and these other things fueled prescription prices and how we got to where we're at now. And it was really eye-opening to me to understand like the kind of the qualms that we have now with traditional medicine, basically how pharmaceuticals are dispensed and the issues. It's the price gouging. Here's another dirty truth. With Mary Pat and I don't have health, either no health insurance or whack health insurance. So she was basically paying out of pocket for all her prescriptions, and she was calling like around to get best pricing. And like, you know, one place would be $14, the other place would be $84. It's like, how can there be a variance of $70 in the same drug? Like, you don't see, at least in right now, you don't see a ton of those variances in Maryland. It seems like most dispensaries are fairly in line. We saw some dispensaries out west trying to get a little silly in the very beginning.
Yeah, at the beginning.
We saw what happened.
We were up there doing some lobbying with the Maryland Normal.
Of course you were.
Yeah.
I mean, charging, what, $90 for an eighth or $80 for an eighth, whatever he was trying to get.
Is that what it was?
It was bad. Because he was grand. Everything was,
the only show in town at that time.
I think it was $20 a gram all the way up is how he was doing it.
It was, what was it? Oh, shoot.
Maybe
like 900 or $1,000 ounces or something to that effect. That's what the numbers came out to. Yeah. The first month or two or whatever it was. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Anyway, we saw what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
The market stood up pretty quick.
And that's the one thing about the industry. And I think not just in Maryland, just the cannabis industry in general, right? Like, people are super opinionated about it. And they have no problem kind of weeding out some. I mean, we've seen some of the bad actors get weeded out.
Indeed. And it's funny, technology has allowed all this to happen.
Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't have known any of this stuff, you know, 15 years ago.
Now, for you to
social
have
media has allowed
to, like,
us to bring a lot of information out.
Yeah, it would have taken you so long to get the message out on any of these initiatives.
You wouldn't even have known. Yeah. You wouldn't even have known.
So tell us about some of the next initiatives for Veterans 22 and then some of the other things you got going on.
Sure. Well, I should have brought a list for that one, but off the top, we are really active with, like I said earlier, the Veterans Administration. I went up to the research department probably about 6 months ago now, talking about cannabidiol, Epidiolex, and some of these other FDA-approved medicines. On Green Street, they weren't aware of that literature yet, so they kind of showed a little bit of interest. The next day, I go out and I start working with the industry. Right now, we've got a team together called the People's Research Project, and we meet monthly, and we're looking into suppositories support for male prostate health. And once we've cleared some of that work, we'll migrate into endometriosis for some female issues. We're working directly with the VA. We're trying to set, you know, the parameters and you know, see about the suppository, CBD suppositories. That's how we're going to try to work that angle. Some other things that we're doing, we're working with the Maryland Cannabis Q&A magazine. If you guys haven't seen it, it's one of Maryland's original magazines. There are a few magazines here now. And really this, in my opinion, is like the medical magazine. So we're supporting efforts and causes with that.
It's a really excellent magazine. If you guys haven't had a chance to check that out, you see some of the other magazines had more of a recreational kind of touch and feel to them. The Maryland Cannabis Question and Answer magazine has always kind of kept it medically focused and is definitely a great read.
Yeah, so I'm actually doing a little bit of work for them, and any money I make will go right back to our nonprofit. So that's one of the avenues that we're doing. We were finally able to get a little sponsorship program from a CBD store. I won't talk much about that, but it's good to finally be able to be in that kind of world. Right now, all we've been doing is community outreach. We do about 3 to 5 events a month, kind of like pop-up events at dispensaries. We were able to finally get into our first VFW post and talk about cannabis. So that's exciting right there. That's phase two of our program, reaching out to VFW, the American Legions, the AMVETS, the DAV, and all of our resources and talk about cannabis. And creating that extended partnership beyond just the industry itself. We're reaching our other nonprofits and our other agencies.
There's a local agency around here called Vets Supporting Vets.
Okay.
And they have a radio show in Cambridge that I was on. And then they invited me to the local VFW for a Friday meeting. And one of the guys also invited the local sheriff.
Great.
Because I guess like there was a fear that I was just going to like... So I don't know what they were concerned about, but like
it's the Wild West out here.
We both pull up at the same time, and I look at him, and he looked young, like young, and I was like, "Thank you for your service. Like you look young to be here." He goes, "I'm here because of you." And I was like,
"Should we do this out front or inside behind?"
Yeah, man. Like I thought this was a friendly event, and it was in Hurlock, Maryland, at the VFW, and it was. I mean, honestly, they were really interested in both CBD and THC. They have a lot, I mean, I don't know, it seemed like they have a lot of challenges being in a more rural area and getting rides over to the bridge, and it seems like they have some challenges that maybe aren't the same way living in a Baltimore, D.C. area. Is that fair?
Well, I can't answer to that. I haven't physically been in a lot of VFWs and Legions yet, and there's a few reasons. We're trying to format our game plan. The experience I've had in the limited ones I've gone into is, you know, what do you see when you go into these places? A lot of alcoholism. You know, that's their primary meat and potatoes. That's how they make a living at these posts and Legions, you know. And so I find it's going to be a little difficult when we go start talking about cannabis because, one, we're going to start taking away their revenue. And along with that, it's not – we don't want to take their revenue. We want to co-populate the resources. Like, give us a smoke pit out back where we can consume our flower or let us hit the vape.
What if we write a bill where for recreational dispensaries they can only be dispensed out of VFWs and American Legions?
Love it. Long lines. So, yeah, that's kind of the principle there is opening up those doors. So I'm glad that you were able to get in, and I'm sure...
I don't know if the VFW knew that I was there. That's just where this Vets Supporting Vets group meets. They're probably not allowed back. Yeah. But
I'm sure you will.
The veterans that were there, I mean, it was... You know, it's interesting. Like, the support system that was provided there was really inspiring to me because a lot of these folks... are beat up. They're basically left worse off than they were when they went in. And it's heartbreaking as someone who I've never done that. I've never served my country. I've never gone through the process.
Well, you're serving in a different way right now by saving lives.
But different, but not even alike. I didn't leave my family, you know, for years at a time and come back a different person than I left them. I mean,
it takes its toll. It really does.
And I see that and understand the appreciation. And I have a very good appreciation. And wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy for what some of these people have done and come back and honestly aren't really recognized. Like, they're kind of looked at as, well, that's just the guy that doesn't come out of his house. He's on disabilities, doesn't have a nice car, he doesn't do much, he doesn't contribute, and you don't realize that, like, he was the stud of his high school, went there, you know, PTSD, and now life is tough for him, or maybe he's single because his wife left him because he came back and wasn't the same person.
Yeah.
I mean, you understand.
I feel it intimately. I feel those, because that's who I am.
Yeah. And
I just, I don't know. I wear this for a reason. This is the 1-800 suicide hotline. So 1-800-273-8255. Just press 1. You don't have to be a vet to make that phone call. You can be anybody. I made the phone call just a few weeks ago. See, just because we're out here and we're leading and we're in charge and we're front and center, I call that being at the tip of the spear. A lot of this is a facade, you see. I break down every single night. I still suffer. I still have problems. And if I didn't have cannabis, I know what the solution would be. I would be dead, either homicidal or suicidal, and that's a fact.
I really, really appreciate your courage to openly talk about that. And
that's what we have to. That's why we have to share this message. That's the importance. This is a battle out there for us to have choices to consume the medicine that we know is going to save our lives and not being forced into something that we know could be problematic for us.
So what can we do so that more veterans don't feel forced to go to alcohol? When we talk about the VA and the VA, put them aside. What about the guy who maybe now knows there's a dispensary in his town and it's just is miserable and is just looking for any bit of hope, and maybe cannabis can be that light? Or even just talking to a veteran that could educate him about cannabis. It doesn't, like, I looked at that VFW, this is the point you brought up, and I see these guys. This was honestly a breakfast meeting, so nobody was drinking, but we're all huddled around the bar. And I can't imagine that it's not too much longer before someone starts popping those bottles and handing out Bud Heavies and alike. It doesn't seem like for the veteran who's getting therapy from cannabis that there's as many support groups, there's as many places where he can go and say, here's a guy I can go smoke a joint with and sit around and just talk about how last night I wanted to put a gun in my head because I was so fucking miserable. Yeah. And he says, you know what, man, I've been there. That was me 2 weeks ago. And now we're smoking and we're having this conversation and we're not drinking and actually loading a gun and putting it to our heads. Like, how do we facilitate this connection of veterans that use cannabis and have mental health issues that can be supportive of other veterans that use cannabis that have mental health issues?
Can I briefly touch a little bit about some of our statistics with mental health, and then I'll go right into it.
Please.
So currently, there's an estimated 22 suicides a day because of PTSD. And so I call this the good, bad, and ugly. The good news is, according to the VA statistics, those numbers have dropped a little bit. They're estimating about 20 a day. And so that's good. The bad part of that is, out of those 20 that are committing suicide, only 4 are seeking mental health. 16 brothers and sisters off themselves every day and have not even talked to a doctor about some of their issues. So first of all, we got to break the stigma about mental health. When we found these numbers out about 6 months ago, that changed our whole course of action. It wasn't just about cannabis anymore. It was about the alternative, the holistic, and more importantly, getting into mental health treatment, right? And that's the key. I've had extensive time at the VA in building 22 at Perry Point, which is the world's largest mental health facility right here in Maryland. I've spent some time down at Green Street at their mental health facilities up on the 6th floor. You know, I've gone to therapy, I've gone to treatments. And really, the point is, cannabis is gonna start making some real changes. And we have to know that. We have to keep fighting and pushing. So what I say to our brothers and sisters who have issues, it's really easy. We love acronyms. All we have to do is act. Ask, care, and treat. 3 simple words that are going to help save a life. Nobody's ever committed suicide by asking, are you going to commit suicide? How are you doing? Do you need help? Let's get you treatment. Nobody's going to commit suicide if you do that to them. So we got to act and take care of our own and get them into mental health. I've got a lot of friends that, you know, they go on their own. They don't get the medical help that they need, and I watch them suffer. I watch them suffer through addiction problems. I watch them suffer through family problems. And we call this teamwork and camaraderie. And that's what I think the cannabis space collectively has given us. Yeah. There's, in my eyes, there is, but in my eyes, there's no competition here between you and the dispensary down the road.
You're right. No, we're right? On the same
because
team. Team patient.
That's
team.
Right. Yeah. And so patient. In a veteran community, we have the same philosophy. I could go across this country and not stay in a hotel. I could go with a brother or a sister and make things happen. And that's what the cannabis community additionally allows. So when you couple our veteran community where we take care of each other, you know, we reach out, we talk to each other. They talk about just like speech therapy or communication therapy, where we just get in small groups together and talk about our issues. You know, I'm a vet, 23 years in the Navy. My father won't even talk to me about his experiences in Vietnam. I see him mentally torn up, and I see him now. He's got problems. He won't even talk about it. I think if we can get more people to talking about some of these problems amongst ourselves and helping each other out and get them into mental health, and that's where we're going to make changes.
I think every day I hear this. Like every day I'm hearing, which is great, and it needs to happen, but we need to end the stigma. We just supported a 5K in Salisbury called Erase the Stigma, which was a mental health initiative. Mm-hmm. my dad was an amazing dude, but not overly emotional in terms of talking about anything that was traumatic, right? Anyway, and the idea is that, like, I'm mindful that doesn't fly anymore. Like, that's not how you are mentally healthy, is you bottle in these totally traumatic things. Like, it's way harder necessarily to act on it and to talk about them, but, like, especially when they get to that point. Like, when they get to the point where you are feeling like ending your life, at that point, that's not something that your diet's going to fix, cannabis is going to fix. You're going to need to go through some therapy. You're going to need to speak to someone. You're going to need to enter a growth mindset where you're going to go in and say, okay, I can't be in this mental state. Someone's going to walk me through some exercises, and I'm going to basically make my brain stronger to be able to get out of this place. And that's what I believe is missing in a lot of how we medicate trauma and stress. And as someone who's constantly stressed, I feel like my own little like guinea pig and stuff. And I've been offered a lot of different, before cannabis was legal, I think about the different options that doctors gave me, and like none of them were really that great of options, to be honest with you.
The scary part about that is, for example, myself, I'm like OCD. So addiction is easy for me. It's easy for my family. If you look at my genetic tree, I'm sure that's a scary. I'm about to do some of that just to try to get a little bit more personal understanding of who I am physically, you know, chemically, and, you know, DNA, and see if there's any precursors. But addiction's rampant in my family, and no wonder I just became an alcoholic like that. I do have to be careful with cannabis too, because just like everything,
you can overindulge.
You can overindulge. I personally think I smoke more than I should. Good thing is, you know, there's no horrible side effects, you know?
I'm constantly updating my regimen and changing with THC and entering in CBD. And
always looking for the proper strains, the right terpene profiles.
Yeah, because I want to eventually, like you, I would like to get to a point where I get to this minimal effective dosage where I say, okay, this is the optimal part and I'm not, like, using too much. But the other part of it is, you know, when I overindulged in alcohol, I couldn't wake up for 5 extra hours because I was throwing up and
pissing in my son's corner while he's sleeping because I thought I was in the bathroom.
You know, it was my son's corner. I think it was Chuck's room in college. But yeah, I've been there.
I was face down on the dog bed.
Yeah.
I woke up in a ditch one time on the side of the road, wondering how I got there.
And it's crazy because all three of us can ramble off these stories about alcohol.
Yeah, laugh about them,
but no, ramble them off in no time.
Were we?
How dumb you were.
My blackout driving? I'm serious. I laugh about it now because I cannot believe I haven't killed somebody or myself. I belong in jail for some of the shit I did on alcohol.
You're not alone. I do too. I'm sure everybody, most of the people that are listening to this probably do, right? At some point in time.
Most of my regrettable actions in life have been attached to alcohol. Yep. That's a true story. But it's crazy that society, like this, another time, alcohol versus cannabis and society's take on it. But I think it's changing, and I think cracking into communities like veterans, cracking into patient populations like the older population, it's not, cannabis is used at an all-time high between 18 and 22 year olds. It's cannabis is used at an all-time high at 65 and over population. Like, well Grammy can't be wrong, right? Like,
well, Grammy was probably smoking back in the 60s too,
and that, so there's a lot of part there's of, the, lot of that. That demographic coming back. But also Grammy's tired of taking the 13 pills and not feeling better, and Grammy's mom didn't take 13 pills. Right? Like, it wasn't this idea of, you know, just take a, don't exercise.
That's a culture shift. I don't know where we went down this path.
It's like life
how many
a
years
bit
ago?
Easier, right?
I think
it
was
a little easier. It's easier to dose in a pill.
The
just
take the red pill or take the blue pill.
Mary Pat talks about direct to consumer advertising, and you think about your doctor says you got high blood pressure and you got to hit the treadmill 5 days a week for an hour, and all of a sudden Crestor comes on and some guy on a golf course going, hey, you want to just take this pill and lower your blood pressure? You're like, fuck, I want to go to golf course.
You don't need a treadmill?
Yeah.
You both brought up earlier about the fitness side. I remember, you know, I was taking like 8 or 9 different pills, and then I migrated to cannabis. When I retired from the military, I was 240 pounds. Yeah, I'm 170, 180 pounds right now. I'm no longer on cholesterol meds. I'm no longer on high blood pressure meds. I rarely
you just told me he could run 4.2 miles at least at one time.
I still have physical pain, and on occasion I have to go to the opiates or something like that, you know, for the breakthrough. And so I try to minimize that as much as possible.
For breakthrough pain, it's very, very effective. Mm-hmm. For a long-term safe use, it's not.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we get out of here?
Well, you can find us on Facebook or Instagram at Veterans Initiative 22. We're also on regular web, veteransinitiative22.org. And we try to do a lot of pop-up events.
We've had you guys in. We had you guys in for the week of 420.
We were going to be here for the Jellyfish Festival at the ocean, but they weren't cannabis friendly, so they asked us not to come.
We might be able to fix that.
When was the Jellyfish Festival?
Next weekend.
Gotcha.
To plug that up in this area, they are doing a big veterans thing at the ocean as well. So keep your eyes, stay tuned on that one. I think the air show's coming, a lot of great things.
Air show was last weekend. It was a really great show. Speaking of our Canadian friends, they had the Canadian air team for the first time like ever. Put on a good show. I heard the Blue Angels were fire as always.
I wonder if you tested them, will there be THC in their system?
I don't know. The last thing about the testing thing is like, what if, May 15th, he was having a tough night of sleep, so he drank some elixir, and then now you're going to drug test him 3 weeks later, and he's going to test positive. Like, do you really think the 50 milligrams of THC that he had 3 weeks ago is going to affect his ability to do 360s and spin that airplane around? Like, I don't think so.
Exactly.
So,
I know if you want to talk about geometry, I like to shoot pool, and I know when I'm consuming cannabis, some of those bank shots get easier.
I play goalie in lacrosse, and there's no doubt that I have consumed cannabis and stopped 100 mile an hour lacrosse ball sometimes. So not anymore. I used to sometimes. But they were going that fast. That's pretty quick. But 75, 82, no issues using cannabis. I never felt like, it wasn't like I went out there and I was like, oh, I can't see the ball. I'm like, fall over my face. I felt like I was able to track the ball better. I felt like I was able to understand my positioning better, understand my surroundings better.
Put you in the zone.
Yeah, the mindfulness. Yeah. I feel, it's what people convinced me used to be the stoned feeling. But there's certain time, and there's, I now have the ability to separate the euphoric and stone feeling from kind of the mindfulness or kind of in the zone feeling, as Chuck alluded to, that I can get from using sativas or using the certain and right types of cannabis. And so much so that I used to take Adderall So when we opened our dispensary, I've talked about this a bunch. Like, you know, I quit taking Adderall and I quit drinking. I started using sativas to replace Adderall and indicas to replace the alcohol. And for me, the quality of life has been much better. And like, I just feel that this myth that is protruded that all cannabis makes you sleepy and you can't be performing. Like, I know so many world-class athletes, hashtag Michael Phelps, that like, I mean, seriously, I mean, Michael Phelps is the most decorated Olympic athlete ever. How many times is he pictured with a beer in his hand when he would have rather have like a water and rip the bong hit? I'm sure there's a lot. Like, in athletes all the time. I mean, it's weird, all these different communities that are forced to alcohol and that are forced to pain pills and prescriptions. That and then at the same time, society says everyone's on alcohol and prescriptions. We're like, you made it that way. People are going to use stuff to medicate, and if that's all that you make them allowed to do without these penalties, then that's what they're going to do. It's like a self-performing prophecy sometimes. But look, we got into alcohol, we got into veteran affairs, we got into a bunch of different things. I really appreciate you coming down and taking the time to be on with us today. Everyone, Eric Stanford, check out Veterans Initiative 22, their Facebook page, their website, and look forward to them having a pop-up very soon at Peninsula Alternative Health. Chuck, anything?
No, I'm good. Thanks a lot for your time, Eric. It was awesome. It's always good to have that side of the industry.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and thanks again for allowing me to show. We'll definitely stay in touch and look forward to doing some pop-ups and keep this fight going.
Yeah, and if you guys out there, any veterans or anybody that wants to get involved in these particular initiatives, veteransinitiative22.org, I'm sure Eric has got a lot of stuff going on, can use some help, right?
Oh, indeed. you know, we're extremely active. We got a small crew, and we were able to get a couple more good volunteers. And so right now we got about five of us. And if you'd like to volunteer, for a real volunteer, because this is no joke, give us a holler.
Also, a good like-minded group of individuals to get involved with, too.
Indeed.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you.